So today I'm in Brighton with Abby Guinness. So thank you for squeezing me in, Abby.
You're welcome. It's lovely to see you.
I've got lots of basic questions. We're going to start actually with, where did we first meet?
I think probably here and now.
Here and now.
Although from a distance at Spring Harvest.
Lots of times at Spring Harvest in the far distance. So question number one is, do you drink tea?
I do now. I have always been a non-tea drinker, but started drinking tea about 3 years ago, strangely. I didn't decide to take it up. I think maybe when I had my first baby, I thought I needed some caffeine. Mm. But I'm not a big fan of coffee. So that started me on tea. Mm-hmm. And also being a social drinker. A social tea drinker. So in recent years, I've started to drink tea, although I never did in my younger adult life.
Yes. So I've interviewed quite a few vicars who've sort of said, I don't like tea, but I make myself drink it when I have to. So.
Well, I don't force myself. I do now like it, but not normal tea, like a normal black English breakfast tea or whatever, I wouldn't choose to drink. But other types of tea I now enjoy.
What's your favourite sort of tea then?
Well, of the black tea varieties, probably Lady Grey. This makes me sound very posh, doesn't it? But Earl Grey and Lady Grey. My husband drinks Earl Grey, and I got into that, and Lady Grey through my mum. But otherwise, I would say my favourite teas are more of the herbal variety, a fresh mint tea or a peppermint. I drink quite a lot of peppermint tea. Sometimes the fruity ones. Sometimes the kind of spicy ones like cinnamon and things like that. But yeah, if it was going to be a black tea, it would have to be an Earl Grey or a Lady Grey.
Mm. My daughter drinks chai.
Yeah.
Which has cardamom in it. She likes that kind of spiciness.
That I would particularly like a chai in the winter. And I do have a kind of a chai type. But I wouldn't drink it like a chai latte like you get in a coffee shop. I'd have it just black.
She has it just with... made it like a black tea and then just a splash of milk, not the whole chai latte thing.
Because then it gets a bit overwhelmingly sweet.
It does. It does. So the question which I'm asking everybody on the project is, how do you respond to the statement that Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Well, I have been thinking about this, given a little advance warning, and I'm not sure I would like to describe it as either dying or sleeping. I'd like to say that the church in the UK is thriving where it's thriving. So there are growing congregations, particularly in London and in inner city areas, and there are thriving congregations all over the country who are doing amazing things. And I think as a young mum, particularly, I've noticed that the church is providing a lot of services in terms of toddler groups, baby groups, support networks, preschools. So the church is actually doing a lot. It's just maybe a bit quieter than it was, or a bit, whether it's less noticeable or whether it's just that there are fewer committed Christians. And so I wouldn't like to accuse any church of sleeping when I know how hard so many Christians are working. I think particularly at Spring Harvest, I meet loads and loads of Christians who are completely sold out for following Jesus and loving people and serving their communities. And I think to accuse them of sleeping or dying would be unfair. But it's certainly smaller than it was, and there are fewer, and which is perhaps why we're all working harder. And I think that's partly because of the fall in nominal Christianity. So people don't feel the need anymore to go to church if they don't believe, or to say I'm a Christian or a churchgoer if they're not quite sure if they are or not. I think people are much more willing to opt out. But I would like to think that the church is working pretty hard actually where it's still awake and thriving. I think perhaps Sunday mornings have... Well, I definitely know Sunday mornings have changed. There are so many other things now happening on Sundays. If your kids are in a football club or play an instrument and they're in an orchestra or whatever hobby they might have, Sundays used to be sacrosanct, but now everything happens on a Sunday and church is, I think, being drowned out. And therefore, in the public consciousness of the UK, probably yes, in that sense. In that sense, sleeping, because it's certainly not prioritised by any other institution or organisation.
But I also think people's lives have changed a lot. Mm. So, I don't have the answer, that's partly why I'm doing the project, but actually, if somebody's at work all day from 7 till 7 in the week, and maybe both parents are working, and Saturday is full of other activities and or caring for elderly relatives, by the time you get to Sunday morning, what you want to do is be relax together, not into an institutionalised setting which you don't necessarily understand, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, why would you prioritise something that doesn't bring value to your life in the way you want it to? And I think church is misunderstood by many, what it should provide in this consumer culture. So if I go to church, I want it to serve me and feed me in these ways, which isn't really how church functions, I don't think, or shouldn't have to. But we are a consumer culture, and if people feel it's not hitting the spot for me, then I won't go. I think that's definitely a problem for, I was about to say the middle classes, but I guess everybody. It's
we find with quite a few of our parents who are not middle class parents that what's happening is that one of the parents is working on the Sunday, and it's often the mum who may in other circumstances bring the child to the Sunday event, and therefore they're not coming.
Yeah, as well, I think family time. I've heard people say, oh, we need family time on a Sunday. And I actually think that all age worship is very hard to do. Very hard to do well, in a way that adults and children are both engaged and all want to be there. And so when families say, oh, we need family time today, they don't want to go to church where they get split up. And the adults are in one room doing one thing, and the kids are in their groups doing another thing. And they might actually really enjoy what they're all doing independently, but they feel like they haven't had any family time this week. And certainly friends of mine that work full time, I can think of one friend who stopped going to church because she felt like she didn't see her children enough. And therefore Sunday morning was important to have quality time together. And I think one of the things that could help to wake up the church, particularly to young families, is to let them worship together, or help them learn how to worship together, rather than splitting up into different age groups, which is valuable at times, but I think is another reason why families are struggling to commit to Sunday mornings.
I guess if we look back to the Victorian times, when there was this huge peak in Sunday school, the care and the education which Sunday school were giving people was hugely important in the culture of that time. And we've kind of moved away from that. I guess it's why Messy Church works so well.
Yeah.
And we have now three examples of that type of worship. One is on a Friday afternoon, which isn't families all together, but is family-based.
Yeah.
And what the Sunday afternoon congregation that we have just 4 till 6 on a Sunday afternoon, and that's been going strong for 5 years, and that works really well. And normally we have as many, if not more, people at that than we do on a Sunday morning in that parish, which is the whole kind of how people need to live is changing.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure I would want to put want in there, because I think there's some like really serious social and psychological reasons why people want to be with their families now in a way that wasn't the case in the 70s and 80s. Recently I found some friends who had a really strong committed evangelical Christian faith in the late 1980s have left the church. But an Anglo-Catholic friend of mine who speaks of going to church whatever the state of his own personal faith, and I do wonder whether the emphasis that certainly I had in the late 1980s is believe and come in and belong, that actually when you feel that you're maybe doubting, you feel encouraged or even compelled to kind of leave the worshipping community. And I wondered what you thought about that.
Yeah, I think I agree. I have had ups and downs in my faith and my belief over 37 years nearly. And I have been brought up with a kind of a, you go to church because that's what you do, however you're feeling. And I still remember a quote from a kids' praise album I used to listen to about, we don't worship God because we feel like it. We worship him because he's worthy to be praised and because he's good and he says he'll never leave us and all of these reasons. So I am actually a big believer that we do the actions regardless of our feelings. And I think in recent years, we've become quite particularly charismatic evangelicals, dare I say it.
have become quite sort of, you know, the feeling has to be there. And if you're not feeling it, then you don't do it necessarily. And I suppose as a culture as well, what I want is king. And so I will follow what I want to do and don't want to do. And as I was saying earlier, if it doesn't serve me in this sort of consumerism, then I won't do it. And I think lots of people have decided it's not doing it for me or I don't want to be there, so they don't go. Whereas actually I have found the times when I least want to be there are actually the times when I most get blessed in some way or something amazing happens. And particularly, I mean, I can probably give 100 examples at least of when I've really not wanted to pray for someone. And the vicar has caught my eye and just said, oh, that person needs praying for. And I really grumpily think, God, I can't say no now. He's caught my eye and asked me to do it one-to-one. And I go and pray for someone and end up having an amazing conversation with them and a really blessed time and feeling like God spoke to me as well as to them. It's almost every time that I don't want to do something, I end up coming away going, actually, that was really significant. So for me, I have learnt that regardless of how I feel, I will go. And actually, it's part of acting training as well, is they tell you, you know, if you're not feeling it, if I'm playing this scene, but I just don't feel it, you do the actions and you do the physical motions of how it should feel and your feelings catch up. And so I've always quite strongly felt that, yeah, you commit to going, you commit to doing something, you commit to being a community, which is important. God says church is important, that we're not supposed to do this in isolation. So regardless of how you feel, you turn up. And I think sometimes that can be a year of doubt, sometimes it can be 10 years of doubt, but I know people who've stuck it through and found it worthwhile in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would vouch for sticking it out when you don't want to be there, but I don't think many people do that now.
Next question is about women in Christian leadership.
Yep, just a small one then.
Just a small one. So how can women in Christian leadership relate to those who don't believe women should have a role in Christian leadership?
Well, first and foremost, I think dealing with anyone, particularly when we disagree, should be with patience and kindness and love and understanding and endeavouring to understand from their point of view. So certainly I would try and approach from that. I completely understand where you're coming from. I understand that you have thought this through and that you feel strongly about it, in much the same way that I have thought this through and feel strongly about it. And so in that sense, I think some friends I've come to a position with where we just don't talk about it anymore because we've talked around the houses as much as we can and we're not going to agree. So we don't talk about it anymore, but we're still friends. And I think we each have to answer to God as to whether we did what we felt he was calling us to. And so it wouldn't stop me ministering in the way I felt that God wanted me to, if someone else thought I shouldn't. I would probably apologise, because I'm quite an apologetic person. I would probably say, oh, I'm really sorry if this makes you uncomfortable or if you don't like this, but I really feel God's calling me to do it and I have to be true to that. And which reminds me of a story. One of my heroines is Susanna Wesley, Charles and John Wesley's mother. And she, her husband was in prison for debt. And people began coming to her in the vicarage kitchen for input, Christian input, because the church service, her husband was the vicar. And so he was in debtor's prison and the services weren't really happening. I think they'd sent someone to cover, but they weren't going very well. And so she started having a prayer meeting in her kitchen
And these people that came wanted to be taught, so she started giving mini sermons, and they would worship in the kitchen and pray in the kitchen, and she'd give a sermon in the kitchen, and she had her own 10 children and then hundreds turning up to her kitchen. And Samuel Wesley, her husband, caught wind of it and sent her a letter to tell her to desist, because it wasn't right that she should be doing this and leading this church in her kitchen. And the letter back, there's still a copy of it, I think you can probably get it on the internet, where she says to him, obviously, you know, you're my husband and I submit to your authority and I understand where you're coming from, but I will remind you that it's you that will have to answer to God about the lives of these people and these souls who want to be taught and are coming to be taught, and amazing things are happening and God is moving amongst us in our kitchen. And so she basically refused to stop having this church meeting in her kitchen because she told her husband, well, you're the one I'll have to answer to God on Judgment Day, and I don't want to tell him I didn't do what was in front of me to do. So I think of that sometimes and think, well, if God's putting something in front of me to do, I should do it. And these are the doors he's opening for me. I should walk through them.
So the third question is, what sort of church in the UK would you like your children to inherit?
That's a good question. I would love for the church in the UK to look more like, let's say, the early church in its principles, in terms of doing life together, sharing everything, praying, you know, having a vibrant prayer life, all the things it says in Acts that the early church did. They had everything in common, they shared, they broke bread together, they went out praying for people and healing people, and I would love the church in the UK to look like that again. It will be different because it's a different context and a different culture, but those principles of doing life together and seeing God work miracles, I think that can still happen, and does still happen in places. I think perhaps referring back to that sleeping thing, it's not as visible in the church in this country as it is in many other countries, and that's probably largely to do with our culture. And our lack of need. I think the culture doesn't feel a sense of needing God. Mm. And so therefore isn't hungry for a relationship with him. Therefore, but I think the church could still look like that. And so I'd love for my children to grow up part of a fellowship that really relies on each other, supports each other, prays together, eats together, does life together. I think that's important and empowering, particularly when we don't have close extended family in our culture. I think I love my extended family, but we're all so far apart geographically that it's very hard to actually do everyday life together. And church has to fill that void. And there's so much loneliness and isolation, and it shouldn't be that way. If, you know, I'd quite happily live in community, and we've managed to find a house just about big enough to have people live with us, so we've had two people living with us already, and we're hoping for some more soon, so long as they can put up with new baby crying. But yeah, I'd love the church to be that place where people do life together, and I think when that happens you get joy and a vibrant life, and church will be exciting and fun and a good place to be and a wholesome, healthy place to be. It's never going to be easy because people are people and they'll always disagree about things, and but if my children find church fun, that's a good start. Something that actually, where they get to play a part, where they actually get to do stuff. Because as I was talking about, if it's consumerism, if you go for what it does for me, it's never going to be fully satisfying. It's got to be about the part you can play as well as what you receive.
Because of the age of my children, I think there is this kind of non-consumerist bump of people coming through where consumerism is less important. Interestingly, the retail sales figures came through again last month and they've gone down again. People are just buying less stuff, and the commentary was people are moving away from consumerism.
It's encouraging.
Into sort of other ways of thinking about who they are, and I think that we need to be able to remind people that that's always been what the church is about. Actually, we've always been about that.
So. It's probably I don't understand all these generational titles. I think I'm just about Generation X, because I'm not quite a Y or a millennial. But I do think in my generation, certainly, there's been a lot of consumerism, and then in the Y generation, it's the what can you do for me? What should, you know, my career needs to satisfy me, and I need this and I need that, and I deserve this, that and the other. And I hope we're moving away from that. I certainly don't want my children to feel entitled to anything, but to know that everything we have is a gift.
So last question is, what's your favourite thing which begins with T?
I think it's funny, when someone asks you that question, you suddenly can't think of anything beginning with T. But I think trees. I love being outdoors. I love trees. I love the summer when all the trees have got leaves on them particularly. But even in winter, they can still look beautiful. But yeah, trees. They look good. I like the way they sound and rustle in the breeze. I like when they give shade. Yeah, big fan of trees. When people cut down a tree, our neighbours cut one down recently, I got really upset. So yeah, favourite thing beginning with T would probably have to be trees.
Thank you very much for seeing me today, Abby.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming.